Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Red Friday in Kansas City. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on today, Alex Smith, former Chiefs quarterback, three-time Pro Bowler, of course does work over at ESPN now, is going to join us. Really excited to have Alex on the show. He experienced a 1-5 start back in 2015 Andy Reid, and so I want to ask him about exactly how they handled it and how this coaching staff is likely approaching it with players. And of course his thoughts just on how big this game is on Sunday. So excited to have Alex Smith join us coming up at 11:30 today. We've got a packed show. I know like everybody has a cliche. Everybody says that on a Friday. Oh, we've got a packed show. We actually like truly do today. We truly do, because in 30 minutes, Jake Eisenberg will put a bow on the Royals season with us. He's been joining us each and every Friday throughout the season. Josh Briscoe is going to join us at 11. Alex Smith coming up at 11:30. It's a fan club Friday as well. Jay Binkley will be in studio. The cocktail of the day from our friends over at Jay Rieger & Co. is what?
A Negroni.
That's right.
A cocktail amongst my personal favorites.
That is your, no joke. You've talked about it for years. That
you
is
and I have been in restaurants where I've ordered Negroni. It's not even like, I'm not doing this just for Jay Rieger's benefit, the sponsor of the fan club. I'm genuinely telling you that the Negroni is one of my favorite drinks. They actually have an event. Negroni versus Martini tomorrow. I'm told we have maybe tickets for him later in fan clubs.
We'll give away a pair of tickets to that event as well. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Toast Service. Text line 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running as well. YouTube, Twitch, X, Facebook. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Cody is going full Red Friday Company man today. He's got a Chiefs Creed is Good shirt on. He's got the 96.5 The Fan shirt on. Drew is wearing an Indiana Pacers shirt. Not a Red Friday man.
Indiana Pacers shirt. It's like the opposite, Drew.
Let's go Sirs.
At least it's not Cincy gear. I'll give him that.
That's fair. Also like closer to like Steelers. Is he supporting them in Dublin
this
week?
He's locked into the Ryder Cup right now. We might have lost Drew for the day. I don't know already.
Well, they're getting their ass kicked.
We are. It's the United States versus Europe. We're getting our ass kicked right now.
Oh, do we get to say we're if it's a like a U.S. versus?
Yes, we are getting our butts kicked by Europe.
Take credit. I don't know if I want to say we right now when they're getting their ass kicked. Let's get to like 3-3 and we can talk.
Well, okay.
Otherwise, you got to wear it. Leave me out of it.
Why does Gold look like he's going to a fraternity rush party today?
I have a TV thing to do after the show.
Oh, okay.
I'll be on with our friends Rob Collins, John Holt over at Fox 4 for their in-zone show, which airs on Sunday. But spoiler, it's recorded on Friday afternoon.
Make sure you say Kansas City when you do that show.
Yeah, yes. Well, they won't have me on when they're taking on the Tennessee Titans. I don't think
that'll
be
probably
there.
For the
that
best.
Week, they won't let me on, I think. Probably. It is good for everybody. You know, we eventually, we're going to have show t-shirts and station shirts. Do you think people would buy a shirt if it just said Tennessee? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Are you sure? Where are you wearing it?
If it had like somehow a caricature of like the show or something and it just said Tennessee cities.
I think it's going to have to be bleeped out in some way.
And yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
And it needs some sort of graphic. Like, you know,
I'm going to the NASCAR race on Sunday. There's people who will wear that shirt at the NASCAR race.
You can wear it there. Perfect. All right. Let's get into this game a little bit on Sunday. Chiefs and Ravens. Obviously, official predictions will come a little bit later on in the day. And there's a lot of different angles to discuss, including, I think, one area that the Chiefs haven't been tested in yet defensively, and I think it's going to come on Sunday, but we'll just start pretty simple here. Anytime there's a big time game that the Chiefs are in, I like to hear from you guys on the text line, obviously the three of us on the show. How does it look? What's the game script, if you will, for a Chiefs win? What's the game script look like if the Chiefs lose on Sunday?
I think it's pretty simple in the Chiefs win department, because that's going to be, they look significantly better on offense, but still maintain ball control. I don't think all of a sudden it's five plays for 75 yards and a touchdown. They are going to win time of possession. They are going to run the ball significantly better. And on the five red zone trips I think they need, they cash in for touchdowns on at least two of them. That's what I genuinely think is that. And I don't think Mahomes is the leading rusher again. I think either Tyquan Thornton or Xavier Worthy are the leading receivers for the team in order to do it. And they don't let Lamar Jackson run for 80 to 100 yards like he's capable of. Lamar Jackson is a 1,000-yard rusher a lot of years. They have to keep him bottled up to the point of, if he's below 50 yards and the other things I just said happened on the ground, I won't even give you any other. I don't care if Derrick Henry gets a little. I don't care if the receivers. I don't care if Zay Flowers makes some catches on Trent McDuffie. If Lamar Jackson is under 50 yards rushing and the things I just said happen on offense, I think that that's the clearest path to a win.
The path definitely involves, to me, the offense for Kansas City. Like, I think, yeah, the defense is going to have to contain Derrick Henry. We'll get to some numbers in the track record there. Steve Spagnuolo has done a great job against Derrick Henry. Two of the last three meetings, they've been unable to get over 100 yards with Derrick Henry. That even goes back to his Tennessee Titans day, that AFC title game when the Chiefs didn't have one of their best defensive players, and yet they still stuffed Derrick Henry. So I'm confident in that. Yes, that's probably part of the game script, Cody. I guess for me, it's one particular thing on offense that has to be there. You mentioned the rushing game and everything like that. I think it's going to be that Xavier Worthy cannot just be a decoy on Sunday. I know we're all excited that it looks like he's going to play, and that's great. It can't just
be a real player.
It can't just that's be fair. That he's on the field and like, oh, well, they're not really still utilizing his full skill set. No, I think they need to have him as involved in the game plan as they would have in week one if he didn't get hurt. They can't have him, or the game plan cannot be, you know, to quote unquote protect Xavier Worthy. It has to be, no, he's playing in this football game. We're going to see some end arounds, some jet sweeps. We're going to see Worthy utilize the way they want to utilize him all season. And with that, that hopefully leads to some more opportunity for some other guys. We know Tyquan Thornton is going to get one or two opportunities down the field. I think for them to win, they will once again have to connect on at least one of them. It doesn't mean it has to result in a touchdown directly.
It doesn't have to be 70 yards. It can be 30.
It can be a big, a crucial drive in the third quarter where the team is down three and it's third and eight and they're at the Ravens 34-yard line, but it's a 25-yard completion that keeps the drive going, and it's just a massive 25-yard gain or whatever, right? That's kind of how I view it. I think the Chiefs win if they still keep the deep threat element. Xavier Worthy actually is Xavier Worthy in this game. And then, yeah, defensively, I'm with you. I just have more confidence in, like, to me, Lamar will get his, but it's whether or not Derrick Henry, for the first time against Spags in three games, basically goes off. We know he's got the fumbling issues. He doesn't have to fumble in this game, but can you keep him in that 70 to 90 yard rush lane? And that's what they've done the last two times.
I think one thing that maybe also applies here that we have not yet mentioned as it relates to the win is, because there is still no Shoe Rice, because we don't know whether or not Xavier Worthy will be full force or 80%, not just a decoy, but, like, you know, a valuable contributing member of the squad. No mistakes. No turnovers. That is absolutely, you cannot afford to lose the turnover. I don't care if it's 1-0. You're not beating the Ravens and losing the turnover battle on Sunday. They are too good of a team. Still, even considering the 1-2, they can score too easily, and you can't score easily enough still to be affording Patrick Mahomes giving the ball away, Isaiah Pacheco putting it on the ground, having backward passes. And I went back, and on New Heights they were talking about it, and it made you realize. I went back and rewatched that play yesterday of Patrick Mahomes getting that ball back after the fumble. I know that it's weird because it's objectively a horrible play. It all goes bad. It all goes south. Patrick Mahomes, like, makes a pass. Pacheco's turned down the wrong way. The play he makes to get that ball back, it is one of the most incredible plays I've ever seen Patrick Mahomes make. The distance he covers, the play for the ball, all of it. It makes no sense that he should be that good at getting the ball back in that spot. He might have saved the game, the whole game, by getting the ball back in that moment and allowing them to punt it back instead. So, but no turnovers. You can't give the ball away against Baltimore.
Yeah, and so the Chiefs lose. I mean, for those Raven those reasons that you mentioned. I also think for Baltimore, if they somehow at all are able to get some things corrected in their defensive line group, which is going to be very difficult to do, I think, for Baltimore, given the injuries that they have there, and they get some confidence, kind of what Danon Hughes was telling us yesterday. I mean, if it is late in this game, late third quarter, early fourth quarter, and it's a really low-scoring game, I do think there is some truth that Baltimore will feel like they kind of found something there. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird balance, because we all kind of on this show at least agree that the lower the score of the game, it should bode well for Kansas City. But I do think there's some truth to what Danon said that, well, then Baltimore might think that they found something. Yeah, they're giving up 30-plus points per game in each one of their games this year, including to the big ones against the Lions and the Bills, where they gave up, what, 50 to Buffalo, essentially, yeah. Or whatever. Like, those are deflating type of performances for your defense late
in
the
game. If they start getting life where it's in the teens and they're like, oh, no,
heck,
we're
even
back.
Even the first drive, you know, like, if Baltimore forces a 3-and-out of Kansas City's offense, that's a huge momentum shift, even the first drive and a confidence builder in the first drive for Baltimore. So I think it is crucial. We can always say the cliche stuff, right? Get off to a good start. But I really do think it matters for the Chiefs offense. Not even if it results in a touchdown on the opening drive, but like, you can't go 3-and-out and just have a pitiful first drive against a Baltimore defense that has had nothing good to grasp onto so far in 2025.
Yeah, don't give them hope. Keep them down. Because the truth is, you're right. If they go down and score a touchdown on their opening drive, Gold, well, then instead what you've done is you put them right back on their heels like, oh, God, not again. We're doing this again? We're letting another team go down and score on us over and over and over? It can have the opposite effect, to your point. But if their defense gets hot, and the other thing is they've done, and we'll talk more about it, they've done an excellent job holding down Derrick Henry. Feels like if they finally get a game where Derrick Henry gets his, that's how the Ravens like to operate. I think that they are going to have to like limit Derrick Henry a little bit to get the win.
A few people on the text line said, hey, did you guys see that video that was floating around from practice? Xavier Worthy's out there dancing. It looks like he'll be more than a decoy. I tend to agree as well. I think if he's playing, he's going to be heavily involved in this game plan. And yeah, that was nice to see. He looked very comfortable and loose. Now it's one thing to dance on a practice field when nobody is running 100 miles an hour at you to try to slam you to the ground, right? That's a different scenario. But yes, it looked like, and the dancing, range of motion looked good, Cody. Does that mean the catching radius is good?
I'm going to need a doctor to break that down. I don't know what the dancing range of motion compares to catching a football and then being hit. Worthy overall, this is what's so crazy. He's a small guy. We talked about it. We talked about it when he got drafted. Can he stay healthy? Can he stay on the football field? Stayed healthy the entire year. In a year that if he had not stayed healthy, it's a massive problem, and they didn't run into that issue. And so you're like, oh, phew, right? Like, he stayed healthy the whole year. And it wasn't even an opposing NFL player that hurt him.
Sure. Yeah.
It was an unlucky
route.
It was his own guy. Yeah. 2 years in a row, they lost one of their number one wide receiver weapons to friendly fire. Insane. Insane. Just weird. That's all.
Coming up in about 18 minutes, Jake Eisenberg, one of the voices, of course, of the Royals you've heard throughout the entire season right here on 96.5 The Fan, and every Friday at 10:30. He'll join us for the final time this season as the Royals will play their final series of 2025. We'll discuss another member of the, 30 home run, 100 RBI club for this team. They're going to have two players with 30 homers, 100 RBI.
Unfortunately, Bobby won't get there unless he hits a lot of homers and get a lot of RBIs.
That'd be a hell of a three-game stretch. And
15 RBI.
They're going to end up with
games,
a top five ERA in the American League, and yet they're going to finish with probably like 81 wins. Anyway,
I ask Jake that too. It's just like going back to what Vern said yesterday about should I feel better about 500 versus 80? 80, 81, 82, 83?
For me personally, it doesn't matter. I get what he's saying. It sounds better to say I think the winning season thing is big. Big deal in general. Like I'm just kind of where I'm at with the team heading into the offseason. Like to me, 82 versus 81 or 80 versus 81. Like I know what the team is.
Yeah, that's
right. I understand. The actual record looks a little bit better, but that month of June was just such a killer for the Royals 2025 season. All right, one thing that the Chiefs haven't been tested on, in my opinion, through the first 3 weeks is the tight ends they're going up against and how they handle that in coverage. If you guys remember a year ago, a lot of the conversation we had about the defense was, hey, the defense is playing great, but there's one area that teams have success in, and that was utilizing their tight ends against the Chiefs. Whether it was making linebackers in coverage hold up, Nick Bolton's struggles, obviously, in coverage, we know this. And so that was an area where other teams wouldn't necessarily beat them because of it. The Chiefs won 15 games last year, but they had success with it. And so far through 3 weeks, let's be real, the Chiefs haven't faced a high-quality tight end yet. In week one, it was a combination of Will Dissly and Tyler Conklin. Now, Conklin did have two catches for 50 yards. One of them, I think, was a 20-plus yard catch. Last week, Theo Johnson of the Giants. How many of you even knew who he was? Okay, one catch, 10 yards. Grant Calcaterra for the Eagles because Dallas Goedert did not play.
These are just made-up names. These aren't even real NFL players.
One catch for 6 yards. This week, they're going to face Mark Andrews, who got off to a slow start in the first 2 weeks, but had a big performance
who they just lost to, the Lions.
The Lions on Monday Night Football. And maybe Isaiah Likely, who's been limited in practice, has not played this year. We all know what he did in week one last year. He almost got a touchdown. His foot was out of bounds. His toe, I should say, specifically was out of bounds. What I'm getting at is when this defense was really good, tight ends still exploited them. This feels like a game, and they can prove me wrong, where Baltimore, if you're wondering like what I worry about, yeah, of course, Lamar, he's going to do his thing. Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, if Likely plays, that area was where Baltimore moved the ball well. It's where teams moved the ball well on them a year ago, even when the defense played well. And so far, no other team has had the personnel to exploit it. That's an area I'm going to be watching on Sunday.
It specifically stands out because the reason why they have difficulty guarding tight ends is their linebackers. And Gold, as a reminder, did any of their linebackers change in the offseason? Same dudes. Yeah. Still Chanel. Still Nick Bolton. Still Drew Tranquil. Like, they're the same guys who couldn't guard tight ends the last time around. Same safeties. The secondary's not even dramatically different. So if they had difficulty guarding them last year, I got to be honest, there's not much evidence to support that they would just be magically better against them this year. But here's the thing. Last year's defense was one of the best in football, and tight ends got them. Mostly because it's the same way that the Chiefs have lost offensively over the last couple of years, which is, if you throw to your tight ends the entire time, how many plays is it going to take you to get down there? And how many times are you going to be able to get down there without a holding penalty, an offensive pass interference, a pick, a fumble, anything? How long can you take throwing to Isaiah Likely down the field before somebody screws up? And I think that that's part of the reason that they were willing to give up or allowed tight ends to get them so badly during chunks of the year. But I don't disagree with you. It is, on paper, a bad matchup. It just looks weird right now because, as of this moment, the Chiefs have been guarding tight ends fantastic. And there is one change, I'll say. Last year, good tight ends got them. But no-name tight ends like the ones you just named got them, too. Who was the guy for the Chargers who got him for, like, 80 yards? Not even, like, the main guy. Like, Will Dissly?
This year was Conklin, two catches for 50, and then Will Dissly, one catch for 18.
Yeah, Will Dissly got them bad last year. Like, what I'm saying is, even in a year in which they didn't have good tight ends, Will Dissly got him. So, like, maybe there is a little bit of hope that a no-name guy, cooked him last year in the tight end room. Maybe they've improved a little bit, but this will be the first time we know it. How many good tight ends do they play this year? They don't have, like, Kittle on the schedule who's hurt.
Well, they got Laporta coming up.
They got Bowers twice. He's pretty good.
Bowers twice. They have Sam Laporta in 2 weeks. The Jags really don't have one. He's an unknown name, Brendan Strange.
Giants have Evan Ingram, don't they?
No, he's with the Broncos. Nothing with the Broncos so far, but that might just be more about
Colts have Tyler Warren later in the year. He looks like he's a stud at this point in time already. He's one of the favorites for rookie of the year. He's off to a really nice start.
He might be a top five tight end in football by the end of the season, or even better than that.
It's definitely possible. Yeah, it's definitely possible.
In fairness, to that point, last year, Isaiah Likely was the guy that did everything for them. Mark Andrews had two catches all game. So if Isaiah Likely doesn't go, it's a massive...
He hadn't played all year.
In terms of what they have. He had 9 catches for 111 last year. Lamar also ran for 122. He hasn't gotten close to that mark this season. He looks less assertive. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. He looks like he's in between running and in between throwing more often than not. Like, there are moments in that Lions game, it's like, dude, take off and run. That's who you are. But I don't know if he's not lost a step necessarily, but he doesn't know whether he wants to run or throw. And I don't know if that's the offensive line struggles or whatever the case is, but I mean, he hasn't looked particularly like the Lamar Jackson that we're used to seeing, even though he's been throwing the ball great. He doesn't look as prolific
in
of
fairness,
a player.
Can I really? They're scoring 37 points a game, so does he need to run?
Well, I understand
maybe
that.
That's
but
why he's
but,
not, right? They're dropping 40 a game.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying in terms of what he does, because you guys brought up the stat yesterday, the Ravens' offense is not doing much more than what the Chiefs' offense is doing. In terms of yards per game, in terms of all of it, they're basically
they're scoring,
the same
though.
Team on offense. It's just they're scoring points.
Yeah, that's red zone stuff. So maybe do your like maybe the in-between hash marks, you've got a point, but certainly down in the red zone, things are going great for him.
I mentioned Xavier Worthy, how like, he needs to be more than just a decoy, and I think he will be on Sunday. If he is more, and is hopefully what we think he's going to be on Sunday, what does that mean for Tyquan Thorne? He has been their number one wide receiver. Does it automatically shift to where Worthy's the guy that's getting the most targets on the team, or is Tyquan Thorne going to have an increased role because now there's more confidence? I think it'll be Xavier Worthy. I have always, you know, I think said with Thorne throughout the beginning portion of the season, he's going to have the deep threats. When you mentioned early in the week how he should be higher on the depth chart and stuff, I was like, I don't even know if the depth chart matters. Tyquan Thorne is going to be a deep threat guy. I don't know if he's going to ever really evolve into a guy that you're going to want to give nine targets a game to, and he's going to suddenly be the underneath guy.
I think it'll be like three or four targets
a
game.
So will he be wide receiver one? No, Xavier Worthy will be wide receiver one on Sunday.
Do you think just immediately?
Yes.
In the last six or seven games, he really was pretty much just averaging like six catches, 65 yards, and a tutty. Mm-hmm. Pretty much every time he stepped on a football field for the last 6 to 8 weeks, that was pretty much what he put on the field. He was a target monster towards the end of the season and certainly in the playoffs. But they were also very limited on options. I think there might be one more week of Tyquan Thornton wide receiver number one. Although, in fairness, more catches have actually gone to Hollywood Brown.
Yeah.
Could it be Hollywood Brown who's wide receiver number one instead of Xavier Worthy?
I mean, if Worthy's on the field, I think it's him. And again, it's not just a stat thing. If Tyquan Thorne catches a 70-yard touchdown and he
has... That's not what I mean. I just meant, like, who gets the most targets.
But that's what I'm clarifying, because, like, that doesn't count as wide receiver one. Like, Tyquan Thorne could have three catches in the game for 75 yards. It doesn't mean he's wide receiver one. If Xavier Worthy's targeted nine times, has four catches for 55 yards, he's wide receiver one.
It just depends, like, if it's close. If it's 3 for 70 versus 4 for 55, I'll take
three. Just look at snap share, though, too.
That also matters.
If the snap count,
Hollywood's been the number one wide receiver in this team so far. So really the question is not even Tyquan Thornton, but instead, is Hollywood Brown still going to be targeted more in this offense than Xavier Worthy? I don't know that they're going to just turn it right back into Worthy game one. I think that they slow walked him last week. Makes me convinced they'll slow walk him again this week. And he'll be 4 to 5 targets, and some will be in the red zone. But I don't think any of the end around stuff, I don't think they'll be messing around with that very much. I think they'll just dink and dunk a little bit with Hollywood and Worthy. And I think it'll probably be more Hollywood in the early going still, because that hasn't exactly not worked. It's not been perfect, but it's working to some level of effectiveness.
Thorne's role should continue to be what it is. An opportunity down the field multiple times a game.
Thornton, I'm going to throw it to you three times, and two of those times are going to be 50 yards down the field. Okay, so like, I hope that's okay with you, because that's the way we're operating. That's very... I don't even think he's been the number one target. And I'm not just... I know he hasn't been targeted the most. But I don't think of Tyquan Thornton as wide receiver one. I think he's the best wide receiver of the two. I think he's a better wide receiver than Hollywood Brown right now. Or at least he's a more valuable wide receiver, however you want to quantify it. One, he matters more to the Chiefs than Hollywood Brown has.
He's had a bigger impact,
going. And so the just real question is, how much do they really trust this Worthy thing? Why did they sit him against the Giants? I don't think anything has changed on this injury. Maybe pain tolerance level? I don't know. But I mean, he was practicing last week. He's definitely getting on the field. I also think he's just going to get in the end zone, because that's the way it works.
I don't know what percentage it is. I still think there was a small part of the decision last week had to have been, all right,
it's the Giants.
Baltimore's next week. Yeah. We've got some stuff that we haven't shown at all this year with Worthy, and we're unleashing it on Sunday against Baltimore in a big-time AFC game. Yeah. That's what I think. I'm not saying that was the overall deciding factor in why
they were
play,
saving it,
but I think
Baltimore.
That was part of the decision. It was one of those where, like, oh, we're pretty close, and you're like, oh, and also Baltimore's next week. Okay. Like, I think it was something that helped sway the decision. I just don't think it was the biggest reason for why Worthy did not play last week. And everybody that covers the team was surprised by that news last week. And now he's been a full participant for, what, 2 days this week?
Yeah, he's playing.
Yeah.
I know I sounded pretty confident about that last week, and I was wrong. We were both wrong.
Same, yeah.
But also, he was a limited participant, so there was always a risk he wouldn't be available. He's been a full participant Tuesday and Wednesday. Andy's rule is very simple. You practice, you play. He's been practicing in full, he'll play. That's just kind of, I mean, at this point, how I view it. So you think he'll have the most targets, most catches?
Xavier Worthy will.
Take the most yards out of it. Yep. Most targets, most catches. That's what
I think
of his
Worthy. I think that'll be Worthy. I would go Worthy, Brown, Kelce, Thornton.
Ooh, Thornton fourth, huh?
Yeah, because I think Kelce ends up with, you know, three or four catches, and I think Thornton has two or three catches.
Okay.
In terms of targets, right? That's what we're talking about?
Yeah. Targets and I mean, those are kind of related, but yeah, targets and catches, yes. Let's say those combined. Because
Thorne could have the most yards because of the ability to catch a 60-yard pass down the field. But Xavier Worthy, to me, I would love on the first play of the game. I'd love it. The first play from scrimmage for the Chiefs. Go ahead. What are we messing around for? Get him the damn ball right away.
The way their Twin secondary is, routes. Why not? Yeah.
Right away.
The way the secondary stinks, get him test him.
Throw to the guy who's more open.
I do think there's something to be said. You can practice all you want. I need Worthy to take the first hit. Right. Or at least get the first, avoid the hit ideally, but right. But like,
no, but you're going to have to get hit at some point.
Get that one out of the way. Get it out of the way. That way you're just playing football. Do it early. You don't want to be late in the game. He's still wondering what it's going to be like to get hit on that shoulder during a game. Right away, get him the football and, test it basically, but mainly more of a confidence thing. And so he can just get past that mental hurdle that may exist. All right. Up next, let's briefly talk a little Royals baseball with Jake Eisenberg. He, of course, is out west in the final series of the year. We'll ask him about a couple of players hitting milestones last night.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers, the celebrity guests? Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to some history with the Chiefs and Derrick Henry here in about 10 minutes or so. We've enjoyed having Jake Eisenberg join us throughout the baseball season. The Royals will wrap up the 2025 season this weekend out west against the Athletics. And Jake is kind enough to join us a little early out there on the West Coast. Have you been to Sacramento before? I forgot. They're wrapping up in a minor league stadium.
Yeah, this is a little bit strange of a place to finish the season. No, I have not been to Sacramento before. Once upon a time, the Omaha Storm Chasers, Omaha Royals, would have come to Sacramento as part of the Pacific Coast League. But since 2020, when Omaha was moved to the eastern side of AAA baseball, they have not been to Sacramento. So when I joined Omaha in 2020, I would have come here if not for a canceled season. But in 2021, it was AAA East, and so we flew in the other direction. So, no, first time in Sacramento, and it'll be an interesting experience.
I saw you yesterday post a photo of, like, maybe something they had set up there of, like, 1980s full baseball card set. Are you a baseball card guy? Do you collect?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. I wouldn't say that I am, like, a huge collector. I've got one collection that I've been kind of working on over the years. I've been trying to get the rookie card of every player that I've had on a team in the minors. So from Brooklyn, Winston-Salem, Richmond, and Omaha, guys that I've had there that have gone on to make their big league debut, I've tried to find their rookie card. It's a list of about 60, 70 guys.
That's a pretty good list. Do you try to get like autographed ones or just any rookie card?
No, just the rookie card.
Okay.
Just the basic rookie card, which for some guys is a little bit trickier than you might expect, but for others it's a little bit easier. There's more of them.
Jake,
but it's a fun little project.
Jake, admittedly, we absolutely had this conversation in the middle of the year about Salvador Perez and age and the way. And look, going back, these are some of the issues that eventually are going to keep this team out of the playoffs. But Salvador Perez had a stretch of games where we're like, maybe he's just too old and it's not going to work out. He finishes last night with 100 RBI. He already hit his 30th home run. For a guy this long in the tooth for major league standards, pretty impressive he's able to still put up those numbers.
Yeah, and if only we had the audio from early in like April or May where I said, just you wait. And like here's the thing. Like here's what's so great about it is like when I got to the Royals in 2023, having been, watching the Royals from afar in Omaha for a couple of years, I thought maybe the same thing. I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe this is the year that there's some regression. And then I saw Salvador Perez up close every day for the first time. And I finally started to understand what actually helps him keep Father Time at bay. It is a relentless energy. It is a relentless pursuit of excellence. It is a relentless desire to win. It is a relentless ability to have fun playing baseball every single day. And what I've seen now for the last 3 years is the same exact discussion happen in April or May or June or at some point during the season of, oh, is this the year where maybe Salvi should hit lower in the lineup or maybe not catch? And then we look up at the end of the season and he's had a terrific, productive year. And so I, last year, decided I will never be a part of the camp that says, oh, is this the year? When it happens, it'll happen. If it happens, it'll happen. Until then, Salvador Perez is going to be an everyday productive player and a joy to watch every single day.
Jake, we've talked about the offensive struggles, you know, at times throughout this season and now looking to this final series and unfortunately just where they're likely to finish in terms of record, whether it's going to be a 81-win season, maybe it's an 82-win season, whatever it may end up being. If we could simplify it down, is it just you look at this team having maybe a top five ERA in the American League and going to have multiple players with 30 homers and 100 RBI? Was June just the killer for them?
I mean, in short answer, you can look at any number of losses. Like June was a very bad month, but September, the beginning of September, was also not so great in terms of wins and losses. I actually look at this slightly differently, and I've tried to distill this in the simplest way that I can understand. And what I noticed is I compared some first half statistics and some second half statistics, and it actually painted a pretty interesting picture of why the Royals are right around 500. First half of the season, the Royals' rotation was top five in baseball in ERA, and the offense was second to last in runs scored per game. Second half of the season, the offense is top 10 in baseball in runs scored, and the Royals' rotation is bottom 10 in ERA. So at multiple times this season, the Royals have had a top five rotation and a top 10 offense. They just have not happened at the same time. And because they have flipped, and they have flipped so dramatically, you wind up with a team that has had all the facets you need to have a contending winning team, but because they have not all coalesced at the same time, you wind up right now at 80 and 79.
We had Vern on Wednesday. He said he views baseball, and for this team in particular, the season level of success differently, depending on 80 wins, 81 wins, 82 wins, which would give you a winning season. Do you view it that way? Do you think the team should view it that way?
Yeah, I think having a winning record is really important. I think it's important when you talk about wanting to sustain success as an organization, which is something that JJ has talked about and everybody in the organization has talked about. If you want to be an organization that sustains success, then you need to stack winning seasons together and have back-to-back winning seasons. And you need to ultimately get to a point where winning season is not necessarily a box that you check. It is the minimum expectation of what you have. So yeah, in that sense, I think getting to that 82nd win is meaningful.
When you look at what they're going to do this offseason, it seems to me, and obviously you don't have, like, JJ's not telling you their whole offseason plan. Right now, it's like pitching. It seems like they're fine. The first five or six guys in the order feel like they're pretty set. Is it as simple as, do you think they'll just take the approach, or would you take the approach of, we'll just put it together at the same time? You know, is it going to be a lot of the same faces in your mind?
I don't know that I, you mean, is this offseason similar to last offseason?
No, yeah, as in, like, I don't know that they'll make a ton of moves. I feel like they have the pitching, might have more pitching than they started the year with, depending on health, and that the offense, I don't think they're going to go out and sign or trade for some big left fielder necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I'll be honest, I have not looked at the free agent class to see where there might be, you know, let's say a right-handed hitting outfield bat necessarily. And they do have one currently in Randall Grichuk, and there is a mutual option there. They're generally not exercised by one party or the other for a variety of reasons. I think you look at this team, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. Like, the pieces are there. You know, you've got a rotation that has proven that it can be top five in baseball and has been top 10 in baseball throughout the season. You have more starting pitching depth this year, assuming health, than you did when the year started, right? You've added, you know, Stephen Kolek and Ryan Berger. Noah Cameron has emerged, and he makes his final start of the season tonight. He's emerged as a real anchor of the rotation and should finish top three in Rookie of the Year, if not second behind Nick Kurtz. And all due respect to what Nick Kurtz has done, although Noah Cameron clearly has been the best rookie pitcher in the American League. And then you look at the offense, and look, we're talking about two guys in Vinny Pasquantino and Salvador Perez that have gone 30-100. You're talking about a generational player in Bobby Witt Jr. that's a perennial MVP candidate. Mikel Garcia takes a huge step forward. And also, you've brought in Jack Caglione and Carter Jensen as high-level prospects that you hope take meaningful steps forward with their first season in the big leagues. You hope Jonathan India bounces back and has a season closer to what he knows he's capable of. You hope Michael Massey bounces back and has the season he knows that he's capable of. And he's finished really strong so far. Kyle Isbell had a really solid season, both offensively, and he was outstanding defensively. And then you see what the other pieces are around that. Now, Tyler Tolbert has been a bright spot off the bench, pinch running. He's come through in a couple of situations here and there. I understand that I'm looking at this through Royals colored glasses, and we're talking about pieces of a team that has proven that, you know, to this point, they are 80 and 79. I think at the same time that a supplemental piece here, a different addition there, I don't know that this Royals team is all that far away from being at the top of this division, and just requires putting it all together in the way that we've seen the Guardians do this year, where it's taken an insane legendary run to get to the top of the division, not unlike what the Detroit Tigers did last year. So, you know, in the 3 years that I've observed the American League Central up close, you know, it's been pretty much three different teams that have led the division throughout the way. They've all done it in slightly different ways, but one thing that has been the same about all of them is that they have all gotten incredibly hot at certain points throughout the season and had multiple sustained winning streaks of 7 or 8 games, or have won 9 of 10 or 11 of 12 at multiple points throughout the season. The Twins did it in 2023. The Tigers had that run last year. The Guardians are having that run this year. The Royals have not had, you know, multiple winning streaks of that length. They have not necessarily gotten hot multiple times, but they certainly have the pieces to put it all together and do it and be one of the most competitive teams in the league.
You mentioned the Guardians and Tigers. We've all been keeping an eye on this unbelievable collapse by the Tigers, and currently the Guardians do have a game lead, or excuse me, currently they're tied with the Tigers with the tiebreaker for the American League Central. Do you believe that the collapse will be official, that the Guardians will end up winning this division this weekend?
I mean, at this point, yeah, I do. Part of that is because the Guardians own the tiebreaker. And so, you know, the Guardians control their own destiny here, and they're playing a Rangers team that is very good, but the Tigers are playing a Red Sox team that is also fighting for a playoff spot. So, yeah, if you were to ask me which of those two is going to wind up winning the Central right now, I'd say it's the Guardians, and it is truly incredible what they've done in the wake of being, frankly, left for dead the second half of the season, having a gambling investigation that's involved one of their starting pitchers and one of the premier closers of the game. And somehow, some way, they have pulled it together and come down the stretch in a truly incredible fashion.
They're going to win this division with a negative run differential, too? Is what's really going to happen?
Yeah, it's entirely possible. It's Cleveland Devil magic all over again.
Jake, we appreciate having you on the show, man, throughout the season. I'd be sleeping in on these West Coast trips, so we appreciate you calling.
Hey, no, I appreciate talking to you guys. It's always been fun. I will admit that, yeah, this morning was a little bit of a tighter turnaround with a very late night flight. You know, we didn't get in until about 2 a.m. local time. Ooh, so yeah. had to set the alarm, but hey, nothing gets me up and excited in the morning, like knowing I got a phone call with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Gold's going to Venmo you for the double shot. That way, at least, you know, you're square.
Yeah, exactly.
That's coming from Drew, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Drew's got it handled.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Jake. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
There you go. Jake Eisenberg. You'll hear him for the final series of the 2025 season for the Royals right here on 96.5 The Fan. Do appreciate you coming on. Yeah, some of those road trips and travel, man, that can be a grind. You're talking about 162-game season, even as a broadcaster. That's a lot of work. And 2 a.m. and then flipping and waiting for a phone call from us on a Friday morning. So thanks to Jake.
Same thing applies. I'm just frustrated with the Royals because I think they had enough talent to be a playoff team, and they weren't. So that's annoying. Like, you don't have to boil it down to much more complicated than that. They have multiple guys with 30 home runs and 100 RBI. They had one of the better pitching staffs in the American League. They came up short.
Yeah, but see, that's where, so yes, they did. And I am excited about the future. And they've obviously got a lot of talent on this team. But the same way we can view it as a positive and say, you know,
it's how did you come up short considering?
Well, it's how you came up short. But also, they had those elements and it still wasn't good enough. And so now, like, heading into next season, if it's basically going to be kind of run it back, 2026, things are just going to work out in our favor. I don't know if I'm a huge believer in that philosophy, and that might just be the reality of what they're going to do. That's fine. And I think they will once again be very competitive in all this,
but will they win a division or get a playoff
as much
spot?
As I can list off all these players that had great years. Okay. They're going to do that again. They're like no regression from them. And all the players that struggled are all going to get better. Like that's a very optimistic way to view the 2026 season.
Yeah. It might just be that. Yeah. I mean, and if everything was reversed, all the bad players are good and all the good players are worse. Then maybe you're just 82 wins again. So the question is, can you maintain that? I do think that there's a chance the pitching staff is quite a bit deeper. Only just based on the fact that the midseason trades they made and the addition of Noah Cameron being good has certainly added some depth there. I hope they do something this offseason. I'm not just saying run it back. I'd prefer they found a right-handed corner outfielder. But that's going to have to come via trade, as we've talked about. We'll talk about our perfect offseasons for them maybe next week.
Yeah, coming up in 15 minutes, we will have Joshua Briscoe joining us, our Chiefs insider, one of our Chiefs insiders, of course, going to host pre and post game this Sunday afternoon, 3 hours before kickoff of Chiefs and Ravens right here on 96.5 The Fan. I do want to get back into the Chiefs with something that has happened the last couple times against Derrick Henry. This is why, as much as we know Derrick Henry is a no question first ballot Hall of Famer, I know he's got the fumbling issues now. My guess is, guys, he's not going to just fumble the football every single game in this 2025 season. I would enjoy one more game of fumbling from Derrick Henry. That'd be nice. Certainly would help
the Chiefs win
the game on Sunday. But Steve Spagnuolo has consistently had, I don't know if you call it a plan, just the right personnel group and whatever. They've held him in check. Derrick Henry will get his occasionally. He's not going to get held to 30 yards rushing. However, two of the last three times the Chiefs have faced Derrick Henry, including one when he was with Tennessee, in fairness, he's been held under 100 yards, including 13 carries for 46 yards last time. So I was joking about you're not going to hold him to 30. They held him to 46 yards last time, as in the opener last year. And yeah, that was where we mentioned the tight ends had success. Lamar Jackson will give them more fits, in my opinion, actually, than Derrick Henry.
I agree. Running, so you'd mentioned earlier in the show that tight ends have gotten the better of them. You know, right, for the last 3 years that quarterbacks getting rushing yards against them has been a killer. Hell, it cost them the first game. They didn't even get to turn the ball back over to Patrick Mahomes because they let Justin Herbert scramble for 20 or whatever the hell it was in the first game of the season. I'm much more worried about that. The thing about Derrick Henry is I both fundamentally understand that he is a great, one of the better running backs in the NFL. Because every time I watch him play, it's against Kansas City, he just looks washed every time they
play.
He's not, though. So, like, that actually speaks very highly of Spags. That, because I know, again, I understand that Derrick Henry is one of the top five backs in the league.
The you know, you talk about athletic freaks, that he is one of the prime examples of that over the last 15, 20 years.
He looks like Ezekiel Elliott in his last year against the Cowboys against the Chiefs. I think it must just be run defense scheme stop stuff, or it might just be that Chris Jones is a good disruptor in the middle and it kind of prevents them from getting to the gap stuff that they like, because there is no good reason other than Steve Spagnuolo is really good at figuring out Derrick Henry, and it is on the list of concerns I have for how they get beat on Sunday. Derrick Henry shreds them. And look, I guess I can eat these words come Monday if it's the opposite. Derrick Henry shreds them for 130 is way down the list. Because for whatever reason, that has not been their issue with them or controlling them.
Yeah, they're also really, like, it sounds simple. Every team would like to do this. But if you go back and watch even last year's opener, they're really good at gang tackling Derrick Henry. Like, it's not one guy trying, because given his size, it's not one guy trying to bring down Derrick Henry. Usually one guy makes initial contact and there's four other defenders right there to help wrap up. That's also part of the key. Derrick Henry, we know he can stiff arm and embarrass one guy. He'll embarrass you.
But he gets 60-yard runs regularly against other teams.
They've been able to get it done against Derrick Henry, and that might make some people nervous because you're saying, you guys are talking about how good they've done. Now this will be the game. I'm just saying that the track record has been very good for Spagnuolo, and Derrick Henry has usually not been the reason why the Chiefs got into trouble with Baltimore. Also, I shouldn't even say the Chiefs are 5-1, right? with Patrick Mahomes against the Ravens.
Have you considered the ref part of it? We're about to get our first.
Again.
The refs are helping the Chiefs. Warren Sharp sent out the career record for Clay Martin, who will be the head referee for the game on Sunday. The Baltimore Ravens are a career 0-3 with Clay Martin being the lead ref since 2020. The Chiefs, a perfect 6-0. They love Clay Martin. Can't, you know, although they're like 6-0, that's like their just normal record for normal teams probably during that time.
Yeah, it's that's the other thing. The Chiefs are winning more games than most teams in, over the last 5 or 6 years.
He apparently has a very low defensive pass interference rate and a low third down offensive penalty rate.
This is both bode very well for Kansas City.
So there might actually be a little bit of something to it.
What's his track record on calling a legal formation on the offense?
Because if he doesn't call that one either, then we're really cooking.
What is his track record with that? Specifically on right tackles, please. That's the stat I want to know.
Give me the breakdown on how often he calls that
one. Did you see the ref last night, Thursday Night Football, as Cardinals Seahawks ended up actually being a fun finish? The Cardinals, to me, Seattle had no business not winning that game, but it got very interesting late. Seattle ended up kicking a game-winning field goal. But there was a point where Jackson Smith and Jigbo was upset with a call. It was an offensive holding call. Charbonnet had run. They didn't even need a hold, and he did. It was a bad holding on Smith and Jigbo. And he was so upset that the ref's mic was on, so it was a hot mic. And basically, he like just cursed towards like about the call.
He said that's BS.
Yeah, and the ref just like this. What you would do to your kids, like in terms of the look, like the if you watched last night. And this ref just kind of glared at Jackson Smith and Jigba. It was a great moment. Like he was in the middle of getting ready to announce the call, and he waited and just kind of gave him like
gave him a sneer,
disappointed in you. Look, it was great. I think the referee was Alex something last night.
I missed that. I know the look you're talking
about.
Go
if you just go on Twitter real quick and search like in Jigba and ref.
I saw it. That's what it's there.
And then immediately I'll find it.
Mm-hmm. And he'll be like,
he was
kind
of quiet in that game.
Until the second half. Yeah, until the second half, he got going. But in Jigba ref, if you just search that on Twitter, and you'll see the look that the ref is giving him.
Because obviously in Jigba said, that's some BS. And then the ref just, he full pauses in the middle of it and then finishes it like, okay, if this is how you're going to act, we can figure out the rest of this. That's funny. You know what, though? The Cardinals are 2-2 and easily could be 4-0, and yet they're just like the least impressive 2-2, almost win every game team.
Look, Kyler Murray is something not why
just
they
doesn't. He was really bad in the first half.
He's not why they are like, he just, there's just such a limitation with him. Yeah. He doesn't have the killer instinct. They were talking about even on the post game, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick brought it up, and I thought he was right. Just, you know, if you're not going to lead, like he's not a very vocal person, and that's fine, right? Kyler Murray's not. But if you're not going to lead in that way, then you have to lead with having exciting plays. And a play, instead of sliding, you go for it on a particular play. And that's not, you got to find some way to energize your team. If you're not going to be the guy that's boosting the morale of the troops, if you will, he's got to do something else, and he doesn't. He's not going to be the guy that's in your face or any of that. And that's fine. You don't have to be,
although I would argue. Almost like he'd rather be doing anything else.
Yeah, I did.
And he's not
laugh.
Like the worst football player, but he plays almost like I'd rather be doing something else, but this is my job, so I come here and I do it, and that's fine.
I did laugh in post game at his presser because he was making a good point. Like, hey, we've got to start quicker. And he said it feels like our offense is taking too long. He's like, it kind of feels like our offense is just kind of loading. I'm like, oh, he's about to give us a video game example. You know, it's kind of like the Call of Duty loading screen. It just, we take too long. If he would have said that, but that's essentially what he was saying. He said, we're taking too long to load. If he would have brought up a video game reference in that, I would have lost.
This person from the 913 does not like Warren Sharp.
No, that person
at
does.
All.
Yeah, he called him an effing bleep.
For what
and
it's
that
worth.
He will bleeping. Yeah.
I've met Warren Sharp multiple times. I find him to be a very pleasant human being.
He basically said that if he sees Warren Sharp, everybody should watch out.
Warren Sharp looks like he could, I think he could scrap a
that
little.
Stash is something.
Dude, he's kind of tall.
This person does not like that.
He's kind of tall. He doesn't look like he doesn't work out. I'm just saying, like, maybe don't pick a fight with Warren Sharp. That's all. I'm not saying for sure he'd kick your ass, but I'm saying it's not 100% that you think it is.
He said it's on site.
What did Warren Sharp do?
This person doesn't like Warren Sharp.
They're standing on business.
I
can appreciate somebody who does that. I thought it was cool last night, too. You could see in real time Marvin Harrison Jr. have the yips and overcome them within the span of an hour of real time. I thought it was crazy.
He stepped up late.
He was big time late. Had the one catch, and you could tell that it was very meaningful to him.
Mm-hmm. People were talking about like him getting traded at halftime. I mean, they were ready to see Marvin Harrison Jr. gone.
Look, if
fine. He can come to Kansas City.
I was going to say, hang on, I put him on my fantasy football trade quickly.
I put him on my fantasy football trade block at halftime. And then by the end of the game, I removed him. And then I got a trade request from somebody. They wanted me to trade Michael Wilson for Marvin Harrison. And I said, LOL, you got to be bleeping me.
Yeah, I think all 31 other teams would gladly take Marvin Harrison Jr.
If he's not working out, it's fine. He can come here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to figure it out.
Up next, let's talk with Josh Briscoe, who will be hosting pre and post game for the Chiefs Radio Network right here on 96.5 The Fan as the Chiefs take on the Ravens. Let's ask him about Xavier Worthy. Does he agree that there will not be any decoy there, that Xavier Worthy will be the primary option in this offense? We'll also discuss Derrick Henry. That's coming up right here on Cody and Gold.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.